Hello and welcome to another episode of Nonprofit Vision. This is your host, Greg Nielsen, President and CEO of Nielsen Training and Consulting, where we work with nonprofit leaders and organizations all across the country to translate your vision into reality. I want to welcome everybody back to the podcast and encourage you, if you're enjoying the podcast, you can do a couple of things to help us. You can hit subscribe to make sure that you're going to be notified as soon as the next episode goes live. And you can also share the podcast with your friends, your colleagues, as we continue to build this larger nonprofit community. Today's episode is going to be focused on something that's a little bit difficult for some to talk about, which is conflict in the workplace. Nonprofit organizations, as many of you know, are not immune to conflict, whether that's conflict between staff members, conflict between an executive and a board, conflict between an organization and a key donor. And to help us in that conversation, I'm pleased to welcome a colleague of mine, Carol Bowser. Carol is the founder and CEO of Conflict Management Strategies. Carol, welcome to the podcast.
So pleased to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you join us. Tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and your background.
Well, I am a recovering employment lawyer who ended up being interested in mediation because I really think it's important that people are actively involved in solutions when difficulties and conflict come into their life, particularly in the workplace. And so I did mediation training at a community mediation center. So I was more interested in values and communication styles and helping people through a process where they have a sense of ownership, not only in the process, but in the outcome. And I got tired of practicing law because that's no stinking fun at all, helping people define their vision, come up with a plan, and provide tools, tips, and language to help them implement that. That was what was really cool. So I created Conflict Management Strategies, and I've been doing mediating, facilitating, training, keynote speaking ever since.
Carol, as a recovering attorney myself, I wholeheartedly support everything you just said. Talk a little bit, because you just mentioned styles and communication styles and leadership styles. Talk to us a little bit about the role that different styles can play in sometimes having or causing conflict to erupt in an organization. So I know we all talk about and we all believe that diversity is critically important for nonprofit organizations. Diversity comes in many forms. We have different communication styles and different leadership styles. How have you seen that play itself out on the landscape?
I've got a great technical term for it, a big hot mess. and that's because I believe that every conflict has an element of unmet expectations, our expectations of ourselves, our expectations of each other, specifically how we're supposed to behave. And that is built on a little bit of a maybe shakier foundation of assumptions about how the world is supposed to work, what an executive director is supposed to do, what a board member is supposed to do, maybe what a board member has the privilege of doing. And then also for employees, what they think, you know, they are supposed to do, what they are appropriately entitled to do. Maybe, you know, just give me a little bit of leeway. And all of that is built on an expectation that people have the same or similar values that are expressed in similar ways. So that's a longer answer for we expect people who have the same value, maybe like respect and trust, to behave the exact same way that we would. And there are some behaviors that people think are symbolically significant of demonstrating respect and trust. You know, like, so for example, you're like, hey, here's Carol. Let me introduce her. Let me get a little bit of a background. Let me let her talk a little bit. And all of that is, you know, I found, you know, very welcoming and very trust building. Different people have different ways of doing that. And we never really talk about what our assumptions are. And so we just kind of view behaviors from the outside. And everybody has different behaviors. So all that diversity comes in a lot of different ways. So we want it, but we don't necessarily identify the depth of the diversity or talk about how we have equitable participation in any type of process so people actually do feel included and heard.
One of the, I love what how you frame that around expectations and that clarity of expectations and avoiding assumptions, avoiding assuming that every board member understands what does it mean to be an effective board member. How do we want this team to comport themselves? How do we want them to treat each other? How do we want to build trust as a board or as a staff or as a leadership team? Those expectations are important to talk about. The other thing that's important to talk about is our relationship with conflict. So as a former attorney, I don't want to make assumptions but as someone who leaned into mediation and conflict, there are some members of our organizations that are comfortable leaning into conflict. Some even seek it out. We have others who have an aversion to conflict and will want to run away from it. How do those differences in style kind of converge and either promote conflict or promote harmony?
Big question there. So I think, yes, some people really get energy out of diving into things and solving a problem, and they can come across like a truck and run over people. And there are other people, as you said, who are just aren't really comfortable with it. And it might be that, what their initial experiences were in life or at work, or they're concerned about being labeled as a malcontent or not a go along, get along person, or maybe having their own agenda. They may kind of retreat and they may say, well, if we value harmony, and I can't tell you how many times I've heard this as well. We say we value harmony, so that means I don't bring up stuff. Now, then I also think that those folks who really love to dig in, they may be running under the assumption of, well, everybody's here and we want to solve problems. I think the answer is people do want to solve problems, but they have very different ways of solving problems. And the leader, it their preference is going to dominate the organization in both good ways and shadow ways. So I think for leaders of, take an eyes up, ears up, head on a swivel. Like I tell my young son when we were in a parking lot, when he, his little head wasn't higher than the bumpers, and now he's a little bit older, but his head for those big giant trucks still isn't above the bumpers. And so I will say, head up, eyes up, ears up, head on a swivel. You need to be looking for it. You need to be noticing what you are seeing and what you are looking for. So for those leaders who have the gung-ho dive in, let's get it solved. I mean, how often are people actually participating? I mean, have you trained them not to participate because you always have a better idea? And I've also seen leaders, because things may be percolating in your mind for a long time, that you're already in the let's get stuff done. You've already identified the problem, labeled the problem, found a path forward for the problem, and then you're launching the solution on people, and they're not caught up with you. And so if it is constantly your way of analyzing things without bringing people along, you may have trained them into incompetence of, not going through and doing that. So, I would say, are you actually seeing and hearing consistent levels of participation? That's like the big thing.
I think one of the other things to realize for nonprofit leaders and board members is that some degree of conflict is natural, is healthy. It's embracing difficult questions. I always get a little bit concerned when I'm working with a board and I ask them, tell me about how you all address conflict, or how do you deal with conflict as a board team? I always get a little bit concerned when I hear, well, we've never had conflict, or we don't ever disagree about anything. Nonprofit organizations are addressing some of the most complex, complicated, entrenched issues in civilization. I expect a degree of conflict to erupt at some point along that journey.
So two things, Greg. One, my stomach just clenched in a knot when you said that. And I think there are a couple different things. One, I may there it may be kind of a recruiting and engagement and retention of maybe we get everybody along because they have just a certain bandwidth that they're operating in. And we've managed to identify and recruit people who are so similar to us in our professional backgrounds and thinkings. Now, you and I know law school warps your mind. So there's that perspective. You may have people in finance. Finance is a different way of thinking about things. Member engagement is a different way of looking at things. So you should have enough professional diversity that there are different things being brought forward. And I mean, the lawyer is going to look at things differently than the finance person, than the HR person, than the community engagement person, than some of the community members. So my question would be, are you actually engaging people's professional lenses, their professional experiences to the degree that would really benefit the organization? So we talked about the recruitment and retention, actually leveraging people. It may also be that they're just expecting the executive director to set the direction. And so they're like, okay, we really like and we trust this person. They've given us enough time to do that. So we're not raising any questions. And it's not necessarily raising questions to be combative, but let's not be ignorant consumers or an ignorant supervisor of the executive director. I mean, are you actually asking questions that are compelling the other board members and the executive director? So help me explain this. What options did you consider, but you discarded? The other point is like, maybe you just have people who are completely risk adverse and they don't want to bring up anything. And then the kind of final thing that I'll bring up is I don't think anybody likes the word conflict. I think we could say we may have some ideas that are shared, and please, the audience, please steal this. You should have ideas and values that are shared, some that are different and some that are opposing. So are you actually bringing forward the ones that are the same, the ones that are shared, sort of, or the ones that are opposing? And unless the person running the meeting, executive director, is out there, are you actually formatting meetings to say, what are we thinking about? What are some opposing viewpoints here? What are some things for this idea that we have overlooked? What does your professional experience talk about? I think then it's a matter of, having good facilitation skills in there to get board and board members actively engaged in that. And that same skill set can be translated to supervising the higher level executives and then trickle down to, with employees about using stay interviews. Are we using your skills? What kind of ideas did you have? What kind of ideas did you discard? How can we better use your talents? How well do you think we are living our mission in our day-to-day operations?
Carol, when that tension is present. So let's talk maybe a little bit more on the tips and strategies side of this conversation. As an experienced mediator, if I'm a leader in an organization and I know that there is tension with someone else, whether it's a coworker, whether it's a board member, whoever, how do you recommend elevating that situation to the other person's attention? How do you initially lean into that? We have some disagreement. We have some tension. How do I bring that to the forefront productively?
So I think, first and foremost, going back to the point, you kind of need to notice, like, what is the subjective and objective things that you're looking at in their level of engagement with each other, their level of engagement with you, and just be able to say like, hey, there's a couple of things that I'm noticing that lead me to be curious. I like that form, like not lead me to believe or not lead me to say, it's like leads me to be curious that I've noticed a change. Isn't that kind of, it's a very safe way of being able, yes, to say like, hey, I've kind of noticed a change. I had a feeling that things seem to be going better, but now there seems to be a little bit more tension, or I've noticed that the interactions tend to be shorter, a little bit more brusque. And we seem to be not kind of moving through this. and just say, you know, I want to be able to have a conversation so I can understand from your point of view. And what I like the leaders to do in their mind, I want them to be listening for what I call kind of the four pillars of any human interaction. One is goals, roles, guidelines, and ground rules. I'll say that again so people want to take notes. Goals, roles, guidelines, and ground rules. Because if the goals are unclear, competing, consistently inconsistent, too ambiguous, or internally inconsistent. I mean, we want to bring great people in, and we want to, you know, watch the budget. So, you know, it's kind of like we want great service at the least amount of cost. Well, of course you want great service with the least amount of cost. That's makes sense. And then the kind of guidelines, which is kind of how we do stuff around here, and then ground rules for how, you know, we make sure our legal, ethical, parameters are really stay within the parameters. And I think if you say like, hey, I think there might be a goals conflict, like I'm listening and it's seeming like you're thinking this is the primary goal. And I'm hearing that, you know, Greg is hearing that this is the primary goal. So it sounds like the two of you might be competing. Or that if we go to roles, I see this all the time, that the boundaries between roles might be a little bit amorphous. However, when push comes to shove, like who has decision-making authority? How are they supposed to keep people within authoritary boundaries? How much autonomy do people actually have? Who's actually responsible for what? And you can frame it in really, really neutral ways. Now, Greg, I don't know, you know, when you were practicing law, if you were involved in mediation, but usually it's kind of like, yes, there's a legal issue and people argue the legal issue. And then we kind of stop arguing about the legal issue and we kind of get down to a resolution. And there is, I think that this goals, roles, guidelines, and ground rules also gives a starting framework, and it helps you articulate for executive directors and board members, these are our expectations of how we do it here. And so I think a great way for leaders to get ready for that conversation is to answer for themselves, given our mission, our vision, our values, how do we address conflict here? And not just, well, we talk to the person directly. Well, yeah, most people, you do that, but the vast majority of people won't have that conversation. So it's how does the leader start the conversation and do it in a way that is very neutral, so you don't polarize people and compel them to argue their position about why a rational, decent human being would act the way that they did, which they may be rational, decent human beings. However, it may not be consistent with the expectation of how we do things here.
Two important takeaways I have from what you just said is, number one, the importance of setting. You know, we all process information differently, and you know, confronting someone at the water cooler and expecting to have a full conversation about the conflict right there is not going to be productive for anybody. So giving that other person, whether it's a board member or a coworker, and saying, I'd like to have a conversation with you. I'd like time on your schedule. Yeah. And then giving them enough of a framework to understand, okay, where is this coming from, or what's the general topic we're going to be discussing, is healthy. In my experience. So that setting piece is really important. And then what else I heard you say was focus on the importance of the mission. How does whatever behavior that you're concerned about, how has that impacted the ability of the organization to meet its mission? So it's not, I don't like Carol, and so I'm going to have an argument with Carol. It's, I've noticed something I'm curious about, to use your phrase, and I've noticed the following impact that I've observed on the mission. That depersonalizes what can sometimes be a difficult situation.
Yeah. One of the things that I think about often with nonprofits and mission-driven organizations, it's a very uncomfortable conversation to have when an employee or a board member looks at you as the executive director of like, I don't think your behaviors are consistent with the mission. I don't think what we're doing is consistent with the mission. I mean, that's a lot of hard back. That's hard to find. Yeah. And I don't know about how you feel stress or how the listeners feel stress, but when I hear stuff like that, I would be like, my stomach would drop, my face would get flushed, or if I was getting frustrated, my back would get up. I might lean into it a little bit more. And I'm like, I don't think so. So I think one of the things for nonprofits, it's very hard when we talk about the mission, vision, and values. And it's like we have great customer service outward, but we have inconsistent how we treat each other inward. And so it's this dichotomy of outward facing versus inward facing that can be really, really difficult, and it can be corrosive. So for the executive director or CEO to say, okay, this is how we want to do it here, and then working at the board level, so that way it's consistent with the board, and then working with the executive leadership team, and then have it cascading down to say, okay, for our team, what is dignity and respect, diversity, equity, inclusion, and access, and providing excellent service look like to each other?
Right.
And then how can we then expand that facing outward? And maybe the outward is just to different departments or to different individuals. So being a, and I think for a CEO or executive director to say, we want to be treating people with dignity and respect and trust and diversity and equity and inclusion and access internally as well as outternally. Outternally? I think I just made up a word. Outternally.
I like that. I'm going to co-opt that word. I'm going to use that.
Outternally. And then be able to say, okay, how do we want to do that? And have those discussions and build in little micro moments within meetings to be able to say, these are some things that our team is working on. So by the way, when you see this, know that that's our team's attempt to be able to live our mission, vision, and values internally while actually making an impact. Because if we have too much organizational drag, people are going to feel frustrated with each other. They're going to feel like this isn't a good working environment. And what we say externally isn't what we do internally. So it's that cognitive dissonance and emotional dissatisfaction, all based on unmet expectations.
Carol, it's interesting, all of what you've said. As leaders, though, sometimes we're hardwired to be problem solvers, and it can be really hard, but vitally important for a leader who is in a situation like this to sometimes take a step back and ask the important question, am I the right person to help solve this problem? Or is there someone else that we need to engage, or someone else who is better positioned to mediate this conflict that we have in the organization? For leaders who are listening, what are some of those considerations that should be going through a leader's mind as they evaluate, am I the right person to address this conflict, or do we need to engage a mediator, a professional, someone else?
Okay, so I have two lines of thought. One is, I've seen this a lot with nonprofit work, is CEOs and executive directors assume that if they're hearing about it, that it is a CEO or executive director level decision. And that may not be the case. And people don't realize it, that if they're elevating it, then the CEO and director is going to dive in and play the fixer role, because that's part of their role, along with strategic, you know, vision and facing outward. So I think pause and being able to say, like, is this actually a CEO executive director level decision, or do I need to kind of push it down? Then whether they push it down or say, okay, I need to be involved in this, recognize that there are power dynamics at play, that people will not be, it is unusual that people will be completely candid with you, because there is an existential fear of retaliation. Or maybe you have done things in the past that made people feel as though, even if we talk about emotional, intellectual, psychological safety, maybe it's not really there. And maybe your fixing skills make you not a good facilitator, because your brain has been hardwired to perceive things in a different way. So I think about it, like, if you want to be able to have a facilitator of being able to say, are the power dynamics such that I am not going to get full engagement with the team, and that maybe the team would benefit from someone who knows about structure and knows about competing communication styles and knows how to listen for values and knows how to reframe things so that way it's feeling more collaborative and can maybe pull people up to a higher level of participation. The other thing is, and I see this a lot with human resource professionals who call me up and say, Carol, I'm too close to this. Carol, I might have extended too much political capital and I can't do anymore. Or it might be that you, senior leader, that you're viewed as part of the problem. Their unmet expectations about you and how it would be handled, there may be low trust. So it's like, if you feel as though there's an issue of trust going on, having someone who can be outside of the system to be able to say, hey, I don't have any loyalties to any department. My loyalty is to the organization, and looking at what kind of experience that facilitator or mediator has to be able to say, okay, what kind of lens are they bringing where they are likely going to be in a position to speak truth to power in a way that the power can hear it. That's a different thing. If you can speak truth to power, but can people frame it in a way that that the power can hear it? And are they actually looking for patterns and institutional memory so that way they can elevate the discussion and then move it to action items? Now, here's my little mediator background coming in, that mediated conversations, if people feel as though they have an equitable participation in the process, they are going to be more engaged in the process and they are more likely to follow through with the agreements and the outcomes. And isn't that what we want? We want to take insight into action that have demonstrable organizational results.
Carol, I want to thank you for taking the time to join us on the podcast today. You've given us a lot of great information, a lot of great considerations and thoughts. For those who want more information or would like to connect with you directly, what is the easiest or best way for folks to reach out to you?
So a couple different ways. You can find me on LinkedIn, where someone a few years ago said I was one of the top 30 people to follow on LinkedIn for conflict resolution, where I curate articles, put little videos up. Then also you can just go to the website, managingconflict.com. And there is a way to be able to contact me. You can also sign up for my conflict tip of the day, where a tip, a trick, a technique, all designed to help leaders and everyone increase their conflict resolution muscles. Because if it is a skill set that everyone is expecting you to use and you really haven't developed it, it is a personal and professional strength that I think, if used deliberately, tenaciously, obviously, throughout our lives, it's a superpower that can change the world.
Tons of great resources there available, Carol. Thank you for taking the time to join us on the podcast. For those who are enjoying the podcast, encourage you to subscribe so you don't miss the latest episodes as they go live. Leave us a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform. And as always, you can reach out to me directly on my website at www.nielsenconsults.com or on social media, Facebook, LinkedIn, or Twitter. Hope everybody stays safe and stay well.